KALW.
Hey, Dad. Kisiki. We miss you. I love you, Dad. I hope you're okay. We're all so scared and worried. They keep telling us no visits. Will we ever see you again?
As COVID cases in San Quentin pass 1,400, families and friends all over California share letters to their incarcerated loved ones.
Terry, I've written hundreds of letters in my 25-plus years of incarceration, but this letter is the hardest I've ever written.
And we hear from one of the men who, until last week, was behind bars at San Quentin.
I had chills, and I was like, oh my God. I was having headaches, and I slept maybe half the day. And woke up worried. I didn't eat. It was just a lot of stress and worries.
A special episode from Uncuffed. I'm Hanat Baba, and this is Cross Currents. KALW has training programs in California's state prisons, including San Quentin, where over 1,400 people have tested positive for COVID-19. This next piece involves one of the trainees. Chanton Bun is a producer for the KALW podcast Uncuffed. Less than a week ago, he was incarcerated at San Quentin State Prison. He'd been granted parole a few months ago and was waiting to get out, but his situation was complicated. Bun is immunocompromised, and he started to show COVID symptoms just days before his planned parole date. Another complication, Bun is a Cambodian refugee, but he lost his status when he committed a crime in the U.S. as a teenager more than 20 years ago. When he paroled, Bun expected to be picked up by Immigration and Customs Enforcement and taken to a detention center to await deportation to a country he left as a child. But when he walked out of the San Quentin gates last Wednesday, ICE was not there to pick him up. KALW's Nina Gensler-Debs, who worked with Bun in our training program, spoke with him about what San Quentin was like during the pandemic and how he unexpectedly found himself a free man.
How much information did CDCR give you about COVID? Like what it is, how it's transmitted? Like how did you know what you knew about COVID-19?
They had these videos encouraging us to, you know, stay socially distant and all that. And everybody's like, why do they keep on saying that when they know we can't social distance ourselves? Every cell in San Quentin is about 5 by 10. I mean, I'm a small guy and I don't have room in there to even like turn around. So April comes, we get a bottle of hand sanitizer and they gave us 2 masks. That they made, and they gave us a bar of soap once a week. They didn't give nothing extra to clean up or nothing.
How did you find out that there was starting to be more cases at San Quentin? Were you hearing from other incarcerated guys? Were you hearing this from the staff? Like, how were you finding out the information?
They do not give us no information in there. We watch the news.
So you were watching outside news and learning about what was happening at San Quentin that way.
Yes.
And how did that feel?
It's I already knew what was going to happen. I wrote people. I say, hey, they're going to kill us. We're going to have an outbreak. I already knew how it's going to play out. So I was trying to prepare myself not to catch it. But there's no way that you're not going to catch it in there. Because you got to sleep and the CO walk by and count you three times a night. And he's only breathing about a foot away from you when he shines his flashlight in there and look in. Like I would sleep and put my towel up so I could have at least a little cushion between me and the bars. They threatened to write me up saying, hey, you can't cover up like that. And I tried to explain to him, I said, it's coronavirus. I'm sleeping. I don't know who's walking by, breathing here. You know, and then you have some guys that just scare out their mind. They put notes on front of their bar letting people know, like, I'm immune compromised. Please stay away from me. Hold up. Let me catch my breath.
Oh, I'm sorry, Bun. That sounds like a pretty bad cough.
Oh, I had a cramp by coughing.
Oh, was this what? So you were saying you were having symptoms inside. Is this the kind of stuff that was happening to you while you were at San Quentin?
Yeah. This even.
Can you tell me a little bit more about kind of what kind of symptoms you were having?
Well, at first I had chills and I was like, oh my God. I was having headaches and I've just laid there. I slept maybe half the day and woke up worried. I didn't eat. And it was just a lot of stress and worries.
Why did you refuse to get tested at San Quentin?
I didn't trust them at all. I was worried that they'll use the information for something else, or they'll dupe us, and I wasn't gonna cooperate in their trial and errors. And a lot of inmates like me don't trust them. Like, no, I don't trust them at all.
So you had a day where you were feeling sick and you were worried. And then at what point did you know that you were actually gonna get out?
ICE came and saw me. And they told me, they said, hey, we schedule you, not CDCR, I schedule to pick me up on the 1st.
So ICE told you they were going to come and pick you up when CDCR released you because you had lost your green card privileges because of your crime?
Yeah, exactly. Right when ICE came and talked to me, I knew I had coronavirus. I knew I was positive because I was having symptoms. And now I'm stressed out because I have the symptom now. Now I got to go to ICE with this symptom. And I don't even know if I could survive it if I'm in ICE because of the poor treatment they have over there. So if I would have went to ICE, I believe there was a strong chance of me even dying in there because of coronavirus.
At what point did you know that you were actually going to get out?
Usually they wake people up on the day that you're supposed to be released, around 3 o'clock. So I was ready.
3 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah, nothing. 6 o'clock come, nothing. 6:30, nothing. 7, nothing. And I was like, oh, man, they left me here. 8:30, they came and got me. I clear up my stuff, and I bring whatever I'm going to bring with me. And then I run around the building saying goodbye to my friends. But most of them were bedridden. A lot of them just waved back, and some of them was just sleeping because they were sick. They were all sick. But I still came around and said goodbye to every one of them. And it was bittersweet. I mean, I was happy for myself, but it was hard for me to see my friends that are sick, and I know they're sick, and if they weren't sick, they would jump for so much joy. The R&R officer came and said, okay, let's go. I'm your escort. And he comes and escort me all the way around to R&R, and they put me in a cage.
And what's R&R, for those who don't know?
Receiving and release.
Mm-hmm.
So they come get me, and he said, let's roll off to the bus station. And I was like, are you serious? Still not believing him. So he drives off. We go to the 1st gate. I say my name and everything. They all say parole. And when he drives out the gate, I was like, what's going on? Where is ICE? And I'm still waiting for ICE to pull up on me. And he just keeps on driving and driving until we got to the San Rafael bus station. Opens up the door, and he gives me my gate money and say, hey, go to that lady right there. She give you a bus ticket. And they take off. I was like, what? So I went to the lady. I say, ma'am, I need a ticket. She goes, you from San Quentin? I was like, yes. She gave me a ticket. And I didn't know what it's for. I know it's for a bus, but I was expecting a Greyhound. You know, I've been in prison 23 years. These buses are new. I don't know what it is. And, oh, my God, that bus ride almost killed me. I was sick, and I had motion sickness. It was bad. And when I got off the bus, I took a nap.
You took a nap?
Yes. I put my bag down on a bench and took a nap for like 10, 15 minutes. Got up, and then there was some construction work, and I asked to use his phone, and he called Anoop for me.
And who's Anoop?
Anoop is my attorney. So when
and what was that like when you guys all saw each other?
I can't even describe the feeling. It was, they were ecstatic. I was happy. They were oh my! I didn't know how to feel. It was just overwhelming. And then Anoop took me and got my COVID test right away.
And then that's when you found out that you were for sure positive.
Yeah, I already told him. I was like, yeah, it's gonna come out positive. So,
do you know at this point why ICE didn't come pick you up?
We don't know at all.
No idea.
No idea. They just didn't come. Yeah, they just didn't come.
What was it like to sleep in that bed last night when you weren't head to toe in a 6-foot by 10-foot cell?
Oh my God, I felt so safe, but it was so quiet. It was way too quiet. So I think my ears started ringing because it's so quiet.
What are you thinking about and feeling about the people who are still there?
Man, I'm so saddened, and I pray for them. And I'm sending all my energy to them to survive this.
That was Uncuffed producer Chanton Bunn speaking with KELW's Nina Gensler-Debs. Now he's recovering at an undisclosed location in the Bay Area. You're listening to Cross Currents from KELW News. I'm Hannah Baba. The pandemic brought our podcast Uncuffed to an unexpected pause. Our outside producers can't go into prison, and our inside producers can't access their normal recording equipment to get stories out. Phone calls are hard to come by. The COVID-19 outbreak in prisons across the state has taken an incredible toll, not only on the people inside, but on the families and friends of incarcerated people. So today, you'll hear them read the letters they've written to their loved ones stuck on the inside. Here's an excerpt of this special episode of Uncuffed.
Dear Abraham, you told me so many positive things. I love that you're a writer and that you've completed your first story. I've been really thinking about our dad a lot and about our Puerto Rican roots. Been learning about the Tainos. It would be so cool to get another phone call from you. I want to hear you play one of your songs. You know, Dad wrote songs too, and you're so much like him. There's so much more to say. I have a new cat. His name is Ferdinand. He has a girlfriend. Her name is Faith. A cute thing that happens is Faith comes over, steals one of Ferdinand's toys, and they're just really cute together. I love you, and as Dad would always say, God loves you and your family loves you. Your sister, Veronica.
Terry, I've written hundreds of letters in my 25-plus years of incarceration, but this letter is the hardest I've ever written. Reading your letter from inside San Quentin, while now me being on the outside, leaves me with survivor's guilt. Why, I ask myself. When I last left San Quentin, it was my job as a member of the San Quentin Fire Department to help those in need. And now, one of my brothers I care about the most, I can't do a damn thing for. I didn't think I had trauma from having done CPR over 40 times in San Quentin. But now, with what's happening, I can see every one of those blank faces. Tragically, after reading your letter, I have nightmares of seeing your face. Do you remember teaching me to play Scrabble? All the long hours of just you and I playing Scrabble, a black and white guy forgetting we're ever incarcerated? All the arguments we used to have when we wouldn't talk to each other for a couple hours just to come back and realize we weren't really mad at each other? Your letter felt like a goodbye letter, but it can't be. You will fight to survive because that's what you've always done. This is but one moment in time. I know it's easy for me to say out here, so I won't push. It's ground zero, and seems as though there is no help coming. But we will fight. I will use my every word for whoever will listen. In solidarity and real brotherhood, your brother, Rashid.
Dear son, as you sit in your cell, quarantined after testing positive for COVID-19, I want to take a moment to let you know how loved you truly are. I am very proud of the way you are working to become your authentic self. I am sure this will lead to inner happiness. Know that you are in my thoughts and heart at all times. I think about you often and miss having you here with us. Just remember to stay well and focused. Love, Mom.
Mi vida, mi papi chulo. Oh, how I miss the days of holding you in my arms and your lips kiss me and your smile that lights up my heart. Reuniting will be so joyous. I know, my love, it's going on 5 months of no real time in sight of when the kids and I could touch you, hug you, kiss you. You are all I think about, and the letters are not enough. This is so sad and so heartbreaking. I hear stories from families, and all I can do is listen to the horror of the unknown, listen to the fear in their voices. I never felt so useless. I try to get answers about their loved ones, but how can you argue with the system that is made to keep people incarcerated? There's no democracy in that. Families wait every day for mail on the edge, waiting for the answers. Is my loved one next? What is there left to give? What is there left to do? All I could do is tell you I love you, and I cling to the letters you send me until it is safe for you to get out and call me. I need to hear from you. I love you. I miss you. Say your prayers. God bless you. Good night. Love me.
Hi, Daddy. I miss you. I've been waiting to see you. I just want COVID to go away. I miss our time together on weekends. I'll always look forward to our time together. I miss the most our family visits. You would barbecue with me. I miss the time we went camping at family visit. You put your jacket on the floor. Outside, we will talk under the stars and listen to the coyotes howl. You told me, don't worry. They won't come in because you will wrestle them. I miss that. You would hug me, kiss me goodnight. I miss helping you make breakfast. I miss your face, your hugs. I miss your kisses and love. I love you, Daddy. Have a good day.
Dear him. Dear Anthony, it's been a long 4 months, starting to go a little stir crazy. I pulled out old letters last night. I laid in bed with the white and black box, you know, the one I keep all your letters in, and just read for like 2 hours straight. I get letters from you now, and I don't open them right away. I used to rip right into them. When I get one now, I hold on to it, knowing that new words are the best words. Silly, right? I hold on to them sometimes for a couple of days even. Hey, look, I know this crappy virus and shutdowns and canceled visits have been hard, and I know some days are harder than others, but I really couldn't do this with anybody else. We will look back on this one day and be so grateful to know we can survive just about anything. And hey, it's a hell of a love story to tell our grandkids one day. Anyway, it's not all terrible. It's the 4th of July as I write this, and Jada, Jaden, and Audie are taking Clay outside to set off a box of fireworks that Jennifer dropped off. Any holiday, birthday, or anniversary feels especially weird these last 4 months, and celebrating American independence in the midst of all this is just a bit too Twilight Zone-ish for me. It's 9:30 at night now, the kids just went outside, I plan on working until probably 1 in the morning and then going to bed. I just wanted to make sure that I got off a letter to you and reminded you that I love you. You are here with the five of us always, you're in almost every daily conversation, your son misses you and talks about you often. I'm so proud of you, babe. Please just keep doing what you're doing, because it's all good stuff, and the kids and I couldn't be prouder. This moment in our lives will one day just be a memory, but it'll be the memory of how we got through the biggest thing that has happened in our lifetime and for at least 100 years before this. We were made for this shit. I love you more than all of the words and all of the books and all of the world. Love her. Love Alicia.
Dear Danny, I miss you, man. I'm thinking about you a lot these days and hoping that you're safe. The idea that my exceptionally bright and curious and compassionate cousin could be killed by COVID sweeping through a prison feels like one more injustice in a long string of them. I remember playing soccer together and wrestling as kids. We had that same insatiable desire to run around, and you were unendingly kind and patient with your little cousin when I wanted to tag along. I remember being 7 or 8, and roughhousing together. I accidentally pushed you into my mom's living room window and it broke. You took responsibility for it. You said the broken window was your fault. You were loving and protective and all the things someone could hope for in an older cousin. It seems profoundly unfair that you started using as a kid, that your mom was an addict, and that you spent most of your life in different versions of incarceration without having committed a violent crime. I try hard to remember that as unfair as your situation feels, there are other people who are worse off, and that even within troubled institutions, there's kindness and there are people who are trying their best to keep you safe. I wish you could be out in the world right now. It's terrible and chaotic in lots of ways, but there are also signs of humanity and progress that I really wish you could see. Here's hoping that day comes very soon. Love, Dario.
I want to tell my husband, you're physically incarcerated, but I thank God that your mind is not incarcerated. You are such a loving, caring man, and I respect you to the fullest. And I know it's just a matter of time where you'll be released and we can live life like the way you should. So stay encouraged, sweetie. I love you. I support you, and whatever I can do on the outside to help you and the other inmates, I'm willing to do.
That was an excerpt of a special episode of Uncuffed. You heard the voices of Veronica De Jesus, Rashid Lockhart, Jamie Tafoya, Benet and Jovina Vihar, Alicia Montero, Dario Abramskin, and Tammy McGee. Listen to more Letters from the Outside on the Uncuffed podcast. Our training program is supported by the California Arts Council and the Department of Corrections and Rehabilitation. Today's Cross Currents team includes Noor Bouzidi, Janae Darden, Julia Linas Goodman, Angela Johnston, Lisa Morehouse, Marissa Ortega Welch, Joshua Sorotiak, and Eli Wirtschafter. Our engineers are Tariq Foda and Gabe Graben. Production manager is Shireen Adil. Our managing editor is David Boyer. News director is Ben Trefney. Our opening theme music is by the John Santos Quintet, as interpreted by Dawood Anthony. For Cross Currents, I'm Hanat Baba.